At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome in, everyone, once again to another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm your host, Clayton Morris. This is the podcast where we focus on buy and hold real estate for the purposes of creating legacy wealth and passive income. We're talking about streams of cash that you can enjoy your life today by having monthly income coming in instead of just looking at a pile of cash when you're 70 years old and you're infirm and you're wearing adult diapers and you can't move anymore. We want you to be able to go out there and live your life today. So I am thrilled because one of my mentors in this business, someone I've read almost every one of his books over the years, and he's been a guest here on the podcast in the past. My guest is Robert Scheman. Nice to have you back here, Robert. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be here with you, Clayton. How have you been?
I've been doing so great. You know, Robert is, I mean, I like say this because I bring you up all the time, I think, on the podcast, because you're really a guidepost for me in this business. I mean, you've written, you know, Secrets of a Millionaire Landlord, How Come That Idiot's Rich and I'm Not. So many great books, so many New York Times bestsellers. How many properties do you own now, or how many deals do you think you've done over the course of your career?
Well, here's what I want everyone to answer. I'm not sure.
That's the thing. I don't know either. That's great.
Yeah. It's funny because people don't realize this. You know, one of my students says I buy and sell and hold houses like people buy and sell and trade baseball cards.
That's great. That's
and,
great.
And I've been involved in over 1,000 documented deals. And when I go out and speak, I actually show people the closing statements. They're kind of like, what? But I bought 8 in the last 4 or 5 days. Just sold one, buying some more, apartment buildings, affordable housing. And I love what you said, Clayton. I fix a little bit and sell, and I've wholesale. But man, buying and holding is where the real wealth is, mailbox money.
Right, right. Every month that money comes in. Sometimes I got a property management company that mails me a check. And I did a little video the other day on my YouTube channel shows it, you know, like here's an old school property management company. They're great. They're fantastic, but they mail them. And I love getting that one or two that come in by mail. And it's like, that's a nice little moment to get that little rent check in the mail, you know?
And I've sold property and I thought I did well, and I'm regretting it now. I go, why did I sell that at 140 or whatever? I bought it for 45 and now it's worth 220 or 250 or 300.
Wow.
And I wish I never sold anything, but it's okay.
Well, I mean, Robert, you've had a storied career in real estate. And like I said, you've been a signpost for me, especially when you hear the naysayers out there. And so today on today's show, our main laser focus today on the show is talking about low cost, affordable properties. And over the past few weeks, I've gotten a couple of questions from people who've read some funny stuff written on like real estate websites that have said, you can't make money with low cost properties. And they give a whole list of reasons why. And I just was laughing as I'm reading this stuff, thinking, wait a second, I make money every month with low cost real estate. That's what I do. I have great C-class tenants in my properties, and Robert does too. And so many other real estate investors, this is your bread and butter. And so I said, I've got to have Robert come on. We're going to talk about $40,000 homes, $30,000 homes, $50,000 homes. And is it possible to make money on those types of homes, Robert?
Well, it's not possible. It's probable and right. Doable. And that's really all I've done in the first 7-10 years of my career. I would buy houses and duplexes for between, you know, $25,000 to $50,000. I guess I'm going a little bit above your 40 sometimes. I bought them 30, 40% below market. They cash flow like crazy. And it's you're also helping the community. But you can absolutely make the best money, great money, and what I call affordable housing. Listen, it's numbers. I'm in South Beach right now. I live here because you can live anywhere you want to live and work where you want to work. But I'm buying in Memphis and Indianapolis and parts of Texas and Georgia, what I call the secondary tertiary cities. And we're mainly doing still bread and butter.
Right.
Affordable housing. Listen, there's Tiffany's and Cartier, and I'm sure they make a lot of money, but there's a lot more Walmarts.
Right.
There's a lot more dollar stores. And, you know, that's the real world. And look at the numbers. If I buy a condo here in Miami, which I've done for $300,000, which is cheap, you know, like a second rate, not on the beach, you know, it rents for maybe $2,800, correct?
Right.
Well, my mortgage payment tax insurance about $2,300. So I'm not going to make any money with vacancy and repairs. It's just numbers. But if I go buy an affordable home in some of those cities and thousands of cities across the country, there's deals everywhere for 30 grand. And maybe I spend 5 or 10 fixing up, so we'll say 40 in it. I mean, call your mortgage broker, your banker. Your payment's about 240, 250, 280 maybe. A little bit of taxes and insurance. And you're renting it, which I do, for 750, 800, 900, $1,000. Maybe it's a duplex where each side rents for 550 or 600. That's $1,200 coming in, and
right.
My payment is $380, $400, maybe $500 with taxes and insurance. So who's going to make more money?
Right. My argument has long been that A-class neighborhoods cause the most problems.
It's a great way to look at it. It's harder to find good deals. The cash flow is less, you know, and it's just all what market you want to being. There are ways to make money in real estate in all kinds of markets, but I love the affordable housing. And Clay, not only is it good cash flow and you can make a lot of money, you get much better deals from older, tired landlords or people moving out of the neighborhood. But I also feel good because we're creating high quality, affordable homes, and we take great care of our tenants. And of course, the argument you hear is, oh, those are rough neighborhoods. Well, that's what I grew up in. I grew up in a lower middle class neighborhood, and we were fine. And my worst tenant ever, out of thousands, was a very wealthy CPA. So there are good rich tenants and bad rich tenants, and good poor tenants and bad poor tenants. And I also love working with Section 8, where the government pays the rent for people on disability or that have special needs or need affordable housing. So a lot of my rent is direct deposited on the first or third of the month, depending on what state I'm in, paid for by the federal government, administered by the states.
Right. And the inspector has to come out twice a year to take a look at the property. And typically you're signing a 2-year lease right out of the gate with a Section 8 tenant.
That's right. Some are one, some are two. And I like the inspections. A lot of landladies and landlords, I don't like those inspections. All it is codes. I want to keep my property up to codes.
Right.
And
right.
We inspect, and I don't mind someone inspecting. You know, if you're doing a good business, you don't mind people looking at your business.
Right. We do. Yeah, we do that on every one of our properties. And you're right. I mean, the tenants where we've had problems in the past with my wife and others is in A-class neighborhoods. $500,000 condo in San Francisco. The tenant just trashed the place. I've never once had a tenant trash one of my properties that I've owned where I was in a C-class neighborhood. And even if they do, and even if something were to happen, you're dealing with a tenant turnover that's going to be a couple hundred dollars, not tens of thousands of dollars.
You had to replace the marble and the gold sink and the right. Whatever, $500,000 condo. And, it's interesting. I've done both, and it's the same thing. And I love working with working people, real people in the kind of neighborhoods that I grew up in. And again, like any group, most of them are great people, even the Section 8 folks. You know, in any group, there's bad apples. And you have to screen your tenants, whether you're renting a $650 a month place or a $6,500 a month place.
So let's dive into some of the myths here. And I'll play sort of devil's advocate here for these people, these naysayers. I mean, there's a lot of myths about it. I mean, and I think maybe it comes from sort of coastal elites. I hear more from sort of people that live like in San Francisco on the West Coast and Seattle and New York that, you know, oh, you're going to buy a $40,000 home in Indianapolis. You must be crazy. That's probably a war zone. And then when you drive down the neighborhood, you're like, wait a second. This is like something out of like a 1980s movie, you know, like where kids are outside playing or parents are at work and it's not rough at all.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's understandable, Clint. I was just in Seattle and San Fran. And listen, let's be real. $40,000 out there buys you a mailbox.
Right.
And so it's out of their realm of understanding. You know, I grew up in Tennessee, so $40,000 to me was like a mansion, you know, growing up. And it's all relative. And before we go through the myths, you know this better than anybody, Clayton. The people that always say you can't do it have never done it.
Exactly, which is why I don't, you know, people want to know, they're like, why don't you spend more time hanging around in internet forums? And I said, you know what? I laugh about it because I'm sorry. I'm too busy. I'm too busy to be
money.
Yeah. I'm too busy to be hanging around with people that want to feel sorry for themselves and who don't want to take action and who have never done deals. That's just my bottom line. I'd rather be around people like you who have, you know, done thousands of deals and know what they're talking about, than wasting my time with naysayers. I just, you know, I don't like surrounding myself with negative people. So, I totally agree with you. So some of the myths, you know, look, here are some of the things that people say: that your tenants beat up your properties in lower cost neighborhoods. You're in these C neighborhoods or, you know, C minus neighborhoods, C plus neighborhoods, and your tenants are just going to destroy your house. And that's one of the reasons why you're not going to make money. What do you say to that?
Myth. Mm-hmm. We'll do myth or reality. The bottom line is, now, if you don't screen your tenants, and my mother taught me something great. She said, Robert, there's no such thing as bad kids, only bad parents.
Right.
And I say this, there's no such thing as a bad tenant, only bad landlords, landladies, and managers.
Right.
So you have to screen your tenants, whether they're rich, poor, middle class. And, you know, we do a background criminal check with two or three previous landlords. We look in the backseat of their car. I'm not kidding. How they keep the back to their cars, probably how they're going to keep your property. We get references. And if you let a really bad tenant into a low or high income property without screening them, you're probably going to have a lot of problems. Correct.
Right.
But I found that there is no difference. People are people, regardless of their bank account. And we have a lot of great tenants in our low, moderate income property that take great care of it. And as I mentioned, income class, price of house has nothing to do with them being a good or bad tenant.
That's great. It's such a great point. And all of our properties, we're doing a full criminal background check, just like you, employment verification. We're going to check with previous landlords to make sure they pay on time. And we're in a new era where in, you know, 2008, 2007, if you had a pulse, you could rent, you know, you could, a landlord and you had five evictions on your record would say, great. You have five evictions on your record and you're going to rent from us because you could probably buy a house in a heartbeat, you know, right now. We'll take you. And now that it's really shifted. I mean, you don't have to take anyone with an eviction on their record. And we don't.
We don't either. And I'll tell you another secret we do is on most of our properties, we spend $30 to $80 to get a home warranty. Now, they're not perfect. You can look at Best Home Warranty of Florida, California, Best Home Warranty Tennessee. And they insure and take care of a lot of the repairs besides screening the tenant. So that's minimized our risk and our expense, even if there is some, you know, hot water heater breaks or whatever. There you go. But screen the tenants, and that's a complete myth.
That's great. That's great. Okay. So that they will destroy your property. These are bad people. That's the next myth. These are bad people. These are guys that are on the margins. They probably don't have a job. They sit around all day. What would you say to that sort of elitism?
Well, it's funny because I was in Seattle when they had the Occupy Wall Street movement out there and actually went and talked to them. And that sounds like the people that were out there. I talked to like 30 or 40 of the projects. They go, what do you do? They go, we do nothing. And they had their $200 Nike shoes on. They were throwing Molotov cocktails at the Nike headquarters. So these are working people. These are single moms. These are salt of the earth. This is what makes our country operate. These are the nurses and the people working in the hospitals and home health care and bus drivers. And I mean, again, you know, all my tenants, I don't know them all now because I use management companies, but I used to know them all. They're great people. I used to go interview myself and screen myself, hardworking, salt of the earth folks. And I don't know where that myth is coming from. Again, someone who's never been out there, you know, in the real world, you know, I went to public school. I didn't go to an elite private school, you know, $40,000 a year high school or preparatory school.
Right.
These are real people. And like you said in the beginning, they work hard for their money. And most of them, there's always exceptions, appreciate if you take good care of them. They appreciate having a place to live and they appreciate their car and they take care of it.
Yeah.
And that's just a complete it's kind of actually disturbing.
Well, it really is disturbing. I get offended by it actually now. I used to not get offended by it. Now I get offended by it. And I see this elitism from people and it just bothers me because tell that to the single mom that rents from me who's got two kids and she moved to the neighborhood where our property is because she wants to be in the good charter school so that and she's gonna stay there for 5-6 years, you know? And she likes the yard, she likes the driveway, and she's happy with her 3-bedroom, 1-bath house and she wants to stay there for years. And, you know, her kids are now getting a good education and I get offended by it, quite honestly.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll never forget, and this happens to me a lot. I appreciate you saying that. I rented this contractor guy who was renting one of my lower end properties. I mean, it was like $550 a month. It was probably worth $35,000. I mean, worth about $55,000. I bought it for $30,000, $35,000. And, I said, why are you moving here? He goes, this is my chance. He had a 14-year-old daughter, and he was living in a trailer park in the roughest part of Nashville. And he was paying like $140 a week for a horrible trailer, bad area, crime. And he goes, this is my chance to get my daughter in, like you said, a decent school, a decent street. And that guy has been working with me and a friend of mine for over 12 years now.
Wow.
And I'll never forget that. He had tears in his eyes. He goes, this is my chance to get in a safe place, to move up for my daughter.
That's great. That's great. So I want to talk about another, you know, another myth, is that these are the neighborhoods that are going to go under first if there is a collapse. If the real estate bubble collapses, we go through another big bubble, that C-class neighborhoods, you're going to be worse off because these are the people that are going to lose their jobs first.
That's such a myth. It's actually the opposite. I've right. studied low-income housing for years and modern income housing, and actually it does better because people move down. What really gets hurt the most, and there's exceptions, you have to know your local market. I mean, you have to know your local conditions. If every job's leaving and, you know, there's nothing going on, sure, that area could go down or the rents could go down. But what happened in the last big crunch is the middle, upper middle class moved down.
Wow.
And more demand for the quality affordable housing. And the rents in the affordable housing, actually, I've studied this stuff a lot, you know, in most areas, didn't go down, it actually went up, where a lot of the upper middle class, upper class places were empty. And I can tell you, you know, again, I'm in Miami Beach. They built 40,000 high-end condos in Midtown, and they were empty for 3 years. But the affordable housing was pretty full.
Yeah, precisely. So it's I like to say it like this. It's not the guy that's delivering the milk that's going to lose his job. It's the guy that sits in the office who tells the guy who's delivering the milk where to drive who's going to lose his job.
That's a great analogy.
Yep. Right? The milk still needs to be delivered. It's that fat cat sitting in the office that's actually going to be the one probably who loses his job and who's in that B or upper B or A neighborhood who's now going to be moving down to a C neighborhood who's going to need a place to rent.
That's right. And it's always, you know, the middle management, upper management that gets cut. And, you know, they still have to, you know, you still have to sweep the floors and deliver the milk and run the hospital.
Are there some other big myths that stand out to you, things that you hear over the years about these types of neighborhoods, the types of tenants, and the way that they handle in a certain economy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And here's what I hear all the time. Just number one, they're not going to pay the rent. And number two, they're going to call you day and night, drive you nuts Saturday night, Friday night, tear everything up. And, you know, that's the two big myths I hear. And business is business. We run our business like a business. And I have insurance, you know, God forbid if there's an emergency, if it's a police emergency or a health emergency, they don't call me at, you know, midnight on Friday. They call the, you know, whatever. I've never had a pipe break at 3 a.m. or gotten any of those calls.
Right.
And I always tell people, even my own house, you know, my beautiful condo here in South Beach, if I can't get a plumber to come at 4 a.m. or an electrician to come at 2 a.m. So real world, you next day you pick up your calls and you fix what you need to fix. So they're all just myths. And again, for people that are not in the business.
And I think it is driven by some of that elitism that people have about, you know, they live in the $500,000 home, and therefore they think that everyone needs to live in the same style home that they live in, with 2 garage door openers, garbage disposals, 3 HVAC systems that are powering central air through the whole house. You know, my tenants actually don't want HVAC. They don't want the whole house cooled down. They want just the window unit in the bedroom where they're going to be sleeping.
Yep, I've got some of those too. And I'll tell you, the other myth is wherever you are, wherever you're living, there's somebody looking up and somebody looking down. And here's the real myth buster. Every house, every apartment building, high-end luxury, middle class, C properties, someone's going to live in it. Someone's going to rent it. Someone's going to sell it. And someone's going to do well with that property. And I'm not prejudiced anymore. High-end, middle-end, low-end. A deal is a deal as long as the deal works and you know what you're doing. You have the systems and checklists.
Right.
You know? They have a 7-Eleven coffee, they have Starbucks coffee, and now Starbucks is going to have $14 a cup coffee.
Right, right. The pour over coffee, exactly. What about the appraisal issue, right? Or appraised value appreciation? So I personally, you know, I like to have a little bit of equity in each property after I'm done with the rehab and I've closed on it below market, you know, and I'm doing my adding value to the property. I've got a nice little chunk of equity in it, but it's probably not going to appreciate just like a San Francisco home would or a, you know, New Jersey home might. What do you say to those people that say, yeah, but you're just not getting the appreciation?
Well, here's the deal. Real estate is micro markets, correct?
Right.
Certain areas of San Francisco, where what micro market? Are you downtown? Are you on the Little Italy? Are you in the best area? Are you in the worst area? And I always tell people they think there's some market out there. There's no market, just like the stock market. Is it high tech, biotech, startup, international? There's not one market. So in real estate, you got to know your market. And Clayton, I'm the most like worried person out there because I really do real estate. And I always buy my property 20, 25, 30% below market after repairs. So if I make a mistake, which I might, I can always get out and sell the property and make money. So I have built in appreciation. Hmm. Now let's answer the $1 million question. I have seen, and again, I can only speak from reality, not from theory or not from some economist, magazine article. I really do this stuff. My low moderate income property I bought in Nashville, not in the worst area, but about 2 blocks away. You know what I'm talking about?
Right, right, right.
Not where they're shooting each other, but kind of 3 blocks away.
Right.
You know, very close. And I was thinking, just like everyone listening, just like the people you're talking about, going, wait a minute. I got it for 40. It's worth 60. I'll pay the loan off, the tenants will pay the loan off after 15 years. I'll get to depreciate it, write it off, get some other legal tax benefits, and I'll get cash flow. What other investment can I do that in? And listen, 15 years now, it'll be worth 60, maybe 65. There's no appreciation in these neighborhoods. And guess what happened, Clayton? And you've seen it too, even in the low moderate income neighborhoods.
Yep.
They tripled.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, in you know, in the neighborhoods in Indianapolis that you and I are both in, you know, it's, you know, you're just even in 2 years, we've seen appreciation. And it's amazing to see appreciation in the A-class neighborhoods. The vacancy rates are higher and the appreciation is lower in the A-class neighborhoods than they are in the C-class neighborhoods.
It is. And the bottom line, you just get so much more bang for your buck. I mean, if you have $300,000, you could go buy one small condo in Miami or one nicer house somewhere and maybe make a tiny bit of cash flow and maybe some appreciation. Or you could go buy 10 houses. Now you're diversified. You got tons more cash flow, tons more opportunity for the appreciation. So I also think it's just a numbers game.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I want to ask you about your brand new book, Robert. Tell us about it. You've written how many books now? Like 20?
18. Can you believe it?
I was guessing. I actually thought it was like 7. I was just trying to be a smartass. But you you actually got that many. That's great. So tell me about the new book. I can't wait to read it. And is it available for pre-order? We can link it up on our website.
Well, not yet. I'm just writing it, but I've got a. I do have a new book that just came out called "The 75 Most Costly Mistakes All Investors Make,"
great,
and how to avoid them. And I've made them all. But I'm also working on a new book called "How Come That Idiot? It's a Rich Real Estate Investor, and I'm Not." And you know, then go to robertshemin.com, S-H-E-M-I-N, and check it out. But the bottom line is, I'm doing exactly what my mentors did: the quality, low income housing, and it's just. It's been great. It's just a great business.
That's great. That's great. And what do you think is the biggest thing that holds people back from taking action? I mean, obviously you framed your new book around this idea that you're sitting there, someone's sitting there with his arms crossed, probably hanging around in, you know, in internet forums, feeling sorry for himself. What do you think the biggest thing that holds people back?
I think it's exactly the service you're doing right here is fear. They're getting information from the wrong parts of the media or the internet or their friends who've never done it. And they're scared to take action. And you know, it's fear. And I tell people, do your homework, do your research, talk to experts, only get your advice from experts like you, people who are doing it, not somebody who says that won't work. I've never done it, but I'm sure it won't work.
Right. Right. I love it. I love it. Robert Shimon is my guest. I always love having Robert come on. I think I want to make this a regular thing. Every 6 months, we'll have Robert back on to speak truth to power. How does that sound for you?
I love that, truth to power. There you go.
And I would love to have you back on as soon as the new book comes out. We'll dive into it. We'll kind of go through different sections of the book, and we'll share that with the audience as well. I would love for our audience to go over to morrisinvest.com/episode 116. That's the episode with Robert. And in the show notes there, we'll have links to everything we just talked about, including Robert's website and the other books that we mentioned here on the show. So you can go check those out. Robert, I've read all of them. You've been a great guide for me and my real estate investing journey over these past many years. So I just want to thank you once again for coming on and talking some truth today.
Well, thank you. And I always want to say to you and all the great listeners out there, happy investing and nothing going on but the rent. The rent keeps coming in.
I love it. That's right. When you're out there in South Beach, the rent is still coming in. Robert, thanks so much. And have a great one, Robert. We appreciate it. And thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing to the podcast. Go over to our website. Check out the show notes page. Go to morrisinvest.com/episode 116. We'll be back here on Monday with another episode of Investing in Real Estate. Until then, go out there, take action, get off your duff, and become a real estate investor. It's the best way. We'll see you next time, everyone.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.